Thank you, Peter. We are here in the Faye and Daniel Levin Performance Studio of WFMT for a live performance with our guest this afternoon, Joseph Kalea, who is making his only U.S. operatic appearance this season at Lyric Opera of Chicago as Rodolfo in a new-to-Chicago production of Puccini's La Bohème, opposite Anna Netrebko as Mimi. And Joseph Kalea will be coming back to Lyric Opera next season for Verdi's La Traviata in November and December, but we're very pleased to have him here for a live recital in our studio, mostly performing selections from your new recording, Be My Love, a tribute to Mario Lanza. So welcome, Joseph Kalea.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me here.
The new CD just came out on Decca Classics, paying tribute to Mario Lanza, and really you credit his singing and the film that he made, The Great Caruso, for inspiring you to be an opera singer?
Not just me, but many singers, colleagues, starting from Luciano Pavarotti, Plácido Domingo, José Carreras, they all attributed their first love for opera thanks to Mario Lanza. And if you look at him and you look at his work back in the 50s, I mean, he really was one of a kind. He had one of the most beautiful voices on record, an innate sense of communication, incredible charisma, and he brought Italian vocal production with a perfect English enunciation when he phrases with the English text, which was an incredible combination and made him, in fact, at the time, probably the highest paid movie star. Bar none at the time. And as my uncle put it, when I was 13, he told me, can you please stop listening to the devil's music? I was listening to heavy metal, rock, and all kinds of music, and listen to this. And he pushed in a VHS player, the movie The Great Caruso. And from the first minute when he starts singing, it's not an aria, it's an arpeggio to warm up the voice. They tell him there are two people from the opera house, and I want them to hear you. And he tells them, it's too much flour in the throat. And his friend, who's a pianist, tells him, well, I have a solution to that. And he gives him some red wine. And he takes a swig from the bottle, and he goes, another swig, and he goes even higher. And the minute I heard that sound, I said, this is the most beautiful sound a man can possibly make with his throat. And it was also dangerous because I made a false correlation at the time that red wine equals great singing. So at the age of 14, a couple of months later, I went to a choir rehearsal. I joined an amateur choir, and I took with me half a bottle of red wine in a plastic mineral bottle. And they told me, they asked me, what is a 14-year-old doing with a red wine? And I said, haven't you watched The Great Caruso? And then they quickly explained to me that, A, it's against the law, and B, it's not really that great for the voice on the day of the performance. So,
well, we'll talk some more about Mario Lanza, but we'd love to hear you sing right now. The selections later on will be from your album, your current album. But this is music from Verdi's Un Ballo in Maschera, which you performed on your previous album, I believe.
I performed it on my previous album, and it will be my next operatic project. Mm-hmm. To my debut in the role in Frankfurt Opera, singing Ricardo.
All right. Tenor Joseph Kalea and pianist Bill Billingham.
Han rotto l'abisso, ah sì, svenato rivedrà l'Inghilterra e la sua sposa lo seguirà senza un addio l'immenso oceano separi e taccia il cuore. Esito ancor, ma o ciel, non lodeggio. Se me forza perderti per sempre, o luce mia, a te verrà il mio palpito sotto qual ciel tu sia.
Tenor Joseph Kalea and pianist Bill Billingham in music from Verdi's opera Un ballo in maschera and the aria Ma se me forza perderti. And that is a selection from the album The Maltese Tenor from Joseph Kalea, who is currently performing at Lyric Opera of Chicago in La Boheme. There's one more performance left. That's on March 28th. And then he'll be back next season for Verdi's La Traviata. You know, we're talking about the early influence of Mario Lanza, and I've read so many reviews about you and your career and your voice, and so many people have said that the quality of your voice really does harken back to that golden age of singing. Who are some of the other singers and recordings that influenced you, especially in those early years?
When I started studying singing, the least thing I did at the time was actually singing, because my teacher told me, you're 15 years of age, you cannot sing more than maximum an hour a day. It was more like between 30 and 45 minutes. And he told me, you have a very natural voice, which means it's going to be much harder to teach. Because when you're studying singing, the illusion is that some of the stuff you're learning means that you're going against nature. You're not, in fact. You're actually relearning how to breathe. Because if anyone of you have ever watched an infant cry, you wonder how they can do that, babies cry for so long without tiring the voice. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that they're breathing through their diaphragm and not using the chest. And there's a total, there's a diaphragm like pumping action, and it's not stressing the vocal muscles at all. And in a nutshell, what we do is relearn how to breathe that way. Of course, it takes 10 years because then there's all the passaggio issues and covering and in the passaggio and everything. Can you give me an F, please? So I mean, of course, when I started singing, I would go like do ah or ah, and this is open and vulgar sound when it should be ah. And of course, it might sound easy to make this difference, but actually, it takes about 8 to 10 years to do this. And the way my teacher taught me was by listening to all the great recordings of Lauri Volpi, Caruso, Bonci, Gilli, of course, the early Di Stefano, and we spent hours really going through every major tenor, turn of the century and beginning of the 20th century, that is on record, whether on pirate or whether on commercial. And I think that definitely, if I had to point to a couple who, in my opinion, had an amazing technique and beautiful voice to go with it, definitely Jussi Björling, Luciano Pavarotti, Beniamino Gilli, Caruso, Aureliano Pertile as well. The list goes on, but these are a few that come to my mind immediately. And coming to North American tenors, I think the two of the greatest tenors in the history of operatic of music is definitely Richard Tucker and Mario Lanza. And total different voices, of course, between them two, but they both had the similar qualities, the genius of nature and technique that made them the greats that they were.
Well, you include a quote from Mario Lanza on your new recording that singing or becoming a great tenor requires big chest, a big mouth, lots of hard work, and something in the heart.
Yeah.
So you're learning from these singers, obviously, but you also have to develop your own voice. So when did you feel that you were really coming into your own as a singer?
I think that I started to be happy with my technique at the age of about 32, 33. So not long ago, about 3 years ago. And when you consider I had my debut when I was 19, that's an awfully long time.
Yeah.
It takes, no matter how much time you spend in a studio with a pianist, with a teacher, it's good, it's a must, but you have to reproduce that work on stage. On a stage that the orchestra might be too loud, the conductor might not be too good, the acoustics might not be too good. So you have to deal with a heavy costume, with a hot costume, with some allergies. Some theaters, they don't even spray water in the air, make it very dry. So you have to deal with all that things. And to deal with those things and to mature and to produce results despite those factors is a very long process, a dangerous process, and a very long process. And nowadays, because we live in such a multimediatic world, we're so connected that if a young singer with a beautiful voice has his debut, even in a provincial theater, hidden somewhere, there's no such thing anymore. Because with YouTube, with internet, everybody will know about this guy or this girl, and they will have a very rapid ascent. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, the thing to avoid is a very rapid descent. and that is very hard nowadays because with the way things are, it's very hard for a singer, operatic singer, to keep level-headed and to keep humble and to repeatedly state to himself, I still have a long way to go. I still have a lot to learn.
Well, some of those elements that you're talking about, I was looking at your website, and you keep a blog, and you had a recent entry somewhat in reaction to some comments that were made recently by Antonio Pappano, in which he said that modern singers are more likely to pull out of productions in comparison to the earlier singers of an earlier time. But as you're saying, things are very different. The pressures that are being put on opera singers, there have always been pressures, but they're different ones now.
Yeah. I think that I've been working with Maestro Pappano. Had the pleasure to work with him since the age of 19. No, that's not true. Since the age of 20, because I sang Carmen in Brussels La Monnaie in 1998 with him. And there is no question that if someone who knows about operatic singing and about singers is Antonio Pappano. He's one of the very, very few incredible conductors that can lift the voice of a singer on a constant fountain, a jet of water. That is how an orchestra responds to Antonio's Pappano baton. And I think that his comments have to be taken in context. I think what he meant was that some singers, some young singers, and sometimes including me in this case, often take on too much, more than they can actually chew. This includes media, interviews, PR, and everything like that. So it's very, I agree with him that we can be sometimes too optimistic of what we accept. But having said that, I have no doubt to mind, and my teacher, who is 19, he just turned 19 in January, who worked with Caniglia, Callas, Sutherland, all the greats of the past, and he knows about my career now, and he had a career back then. He said, nowadays, the challenges are so much more. We have bigger orchestras, modern instruments, higher pitch, we have to sing operas in their entirety. Cuts are not really tolerated anymore, so we're singing much more, we're singing higher, and we're singing bigger. And for this reason, this is stressful on the voice, and of course, with the direct result that you have more cancellations. And obviously, plus, the media, the bootleg recordings, and the way you end up on YouTube if you do a bad performance, gives the singer much more pressure. Mm-hmm. So if I'm in 1940-something, or 1950, even 60s, and I'm not feeling so well, I say, okay, if I crack one or two notes, it will stay here, and in a week's time or 2 weeks I recover, I'll go to Paris from, let's say, Rome, and you know it will be history. Nowadays, that is no longer an option. Nowadays, that performance will be recorded by someone, and it will be there for
eternity.
Posterity for eternity, somewhere on YouTube. And so a singer has, and then that will get a chain reaction. Oh, does he have a vocal crisis? Because unfortunately, it's also a bit the fault of the business. The minute a singer has a cold, it's like, oh, it's the end of the world. I mean, we are athletes. Athletes can twist their knee, twist their ankle. You know, we can have all kind of ailments that put you out of action for a couple of days, couple of weeks. It doesn't mean that your career is over. It means if your career is over if you persist on singing on something which is damaged or something which is sick. And the reason why, fingers crossed, I never had anything to my vocal cords in 16 years of career, is that when I had an ailment which affected my throat, directly my throat, I always canceled. Having said that, I think in Europe, in the major theaters, I haven't canceled a performance in quite some years. So I am pretty reliable that way, and I think I've never canceled a performance in Covent Garden specifically. But of course, there are other singers that do, and other singers that also accept roles that they should not be singing, then they cancel, and rightly so, they disappoint star conductors like Maestro Pappano, who should not be disappointed because he's one of the, and I say this in the most unpatronizing of ways, but he's really one of the geniuses of our time.
Well, we'd love to hear you sing some more. Let's get now to a selection from your new CD, which is the tribute to Mario Lanza. This is a song by Tosti.
Yeah.
What are you going to perform for us? What's the title?
It's Avukela, and it's actually one of the first songs that I've ever sang with my teacher, Paul. I think I was already 15 when I was singing this.
Right.
So here it is.
Again, Joseph Kalea and pianist Bill Billingham. Song by Paolo Tosti, A Vukella, is performed for us by tenor Joseph Kalea and pianist Bill Billingham. So what were you singing about in that beautiful little song?
It's about love.
Of course.
And there were quite a few ladies who fell victim to this song. It really is about love. It's about, of course, the specifically the mouth and really about... You know, here's the thing, that operatic singing, including these songs and works of Puccini, Verdi, if some people say, oh, they're boring, they're old-fashioned, if you just look at the text, and Del, for example, let's mention Bohème since we're singing it here, in Chicago, how naughty Puccini was with Bohème, but really naughty, modern, beyond his years. I mean... Puccini, I call him the first cinematic composer. I mean, if Puccini lived today, he would compose, for sure, cinematic music, beautiful cinematic music, or let's call them cinematic operas. I've just invented a new term. But if you take, for example, the first act of Bohème, you know, when Mimì tells Rodolfo... you know, I want to go out and enjoy myself outside. And Rodolfo, which is the text, he goes, Mimì, sarebbe così dolce restar qui, c'è freddo fuori. And of course, there's the garret, there's the bed, and he's pointing towards, probably pointing towards the bed. And it's text with full double meaning, very sexy, very sensual, and supported perfectly. By the orchestra that creates this mood of love. So a message, of course, to young listeners who have never maybe experienced opera, go read the libretto, follow what is going on, and you'll be surprised how transported you will be by such pieces.
Well, and in this production, you're joined by the wonderful Anna Netrebko, and you've performed together in La Bohème previous to here at Lyric Opera. So how's that chemistry? It's It really is wonderful to see on stage.
I with Anna, and I say this from the heart, she has, on record, one of the most beautiful soprano voices to have ever graced recordings. And coupled with that, she has an innate charisma, just like Mario Lanza, in the ability to communicate what she's singing to the audience. And she has this instinct, this performance, this instinct that just captivates whoever is singing with her. And indeed, my performance does go up a notch because of her, because in the last act, for example, last performance, I really was crying at the end of the opera. I was not acting. I was real tears. And there are a couple of reasons to that. One is definitely Anna's performance. And the other is that I had lost my father right on a performance of La Bohème in Vienna. And it was too late to cancel. So I did it. And backstage, everybody knew what was going on. And everybody was like completely... well, not devastated, but they really, they got into it because they knew what I was going through. And it was a good performance. And the next day I woke up at 3 to take 3 flights to get me in time for the funeral at 11 a.m. And I was singing in Jamisco, close to his coffin in the church, because he would have killed me had I not sung his funeral.
Well, I'd love to hear some more from your new recording. And just to... We'll talk a little bit more about Mario Lanza, but you're going to sing for us now. I guess this is really a song that is associated with...
Be My Love.
With, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Be My Love. It's from the movie The Toast of New Orleans. It was also one of the first movies I saw of Mario Lanza. And in fact, before I sing the song, is what made me a bit sad. Not so much nowadays, but... There was like a movement, an official movement, a couple of years back that tried to denigrate Mario as a second-rate microphone tenor that was all the result of the music, you know, the recording industry. Now, I've personally spoken with many people who were around Mario, some of them opera singers, and they all said, without fail, that he had... a full-blown operatic tenor voice. And this can be heard quite clearly from the recordings. Listen, no soundboard, no technique, no technology can duplicate the beauty. Trust me, it doesn't exist nowadays. It didn't exist, definitely did not exist back then. And I have my severe reservations if humanity can ever invent something that can recreate the beauty of an operatic voice. And the reason is that he didn't have an operatic career is because he chose the movies. I did a cameo role in a Hollywood movie last March, last year. It's a James Gray movie, will be soon out, opposite Marion Cotillard, Joaquin Phoenix, and Jeremy Renner. And I had a 3-minute stint, a cameo. I was playing Caruso on location and his island. Mm-hmm. And for 3 minutes, we filmed 14 hours. Can you imagine then having the lead role? And it's physically impossible to have a parallel operatic career and movie career, unless you take, you know, you do 6 months and 6 months of the year, which doesn't really work. But Mario did sing a lot of concerts. I think he was part of the Bel Canto trio, and there are quite some recordings where one can gauge, which are non-professional, which are bootleg recordings, that one can really safely say that he had a major, major voice.
Well, let's hear now. Be My Love, once again, Joseph Kalea with pianist Bill Billingham.
Sweet desire, be my
us from his land. There'll be no one but you for me.
Be My Love by Nicholas Brodsky with Joseph Kalea, tenor, and pianist Bill Billingham. Joseph Kalea in one more performance of La Boheme at Lyric Opera of Chicago, along with Anna Netrebko, and then back next season for Verdi's La Traviata. In this tribute to Mario Lanza, you include a lot of the popular songs and some opera arias as well. And really, when you think about it, Mario Lanza did so much for the music world by introducing opera to such a wide audience through his films. And you're hoping to continue that as well in your recordings.
I think that will opera ever regain the popularity it had in the golden years? Probably not. But can opera and classical music regain a lot of ground that it has lost? Absolutely, yes. Think of all the talent shows in around the world. America Got Talent, Britain's Got Talent, X Factor, whatever. You have someone with a decent voice, but not an especially beautiful voice, sing Nessun Dorma or another aria. And you see people, the reaction, they start crying, they jump up and clap, and it's a spontaneous reaction. Why? Because opera has that visceral element. Opera is really for everyone. Not all opera is for everyone, but there is opera for everyone. That is my motto. There are operas I don't like. There are operas I find boring, but there are operas that I work out to. There are vocal symphonic pieces sacred music that give you the same rush as heavy metal. And I still listen to all kinds of popular music from Eminem, you know, Iron Maiden, Black Sabbath, I mean Coldplay more recently, Christina Perry. I mean, I really have Elvis Presley, Queen, Sinatra, Crosby. My gamut of music is pretty wide. And I think that opera has definitely its place in becoming more popular. Think of Verdi's Dies Irae in his Requiem. I mean, find me any kind of music from which is more uplifting, more kind of moving than that. I mean, whether you hear it live, I mean, if you hear it live, it's a lifetime experience if it's done correctly. But even on recording, you get that. I mean, how can you not feel moved by Tchaikovsky's Pathétique? I mean, how can you not be thrilled by the Flight of the Bumblebee of Rimsky-Korsakov? You know, I mean, how there's something there for everyone. And it's up to us, real opera singers, to be the ambassadors of this music and not to snub the media, not to go on TV if we're invited, to make anything we can do to be in front of the cameras, in front of mass media, so that the people will hear the real guys doing it. Otherwise, we're going to have pseudo opera singers, God bless them, that will be touted as the real thing, when in fact they're not. I'll give you very clear example. If I go in NASCAR and do a couple of laps in a car and manage not to kill myself, does that make me a seasoned NASCAR driver? And the answer is probably no. And the same thing with opera singer. Just because you can sing a few bars of Nessun Dorma or of any other popular aria without cracking or without really making a fool of yourself doesn't make you an opera singer. But it's up to us to show the...
But Lanza was really one of those singers in that the quality of the voice, I mean, he had the technique, obviously, yeah. But there was something just so visceral about the quality of his voice that could appeal across such a broad range of listeners. And in this recording, you actually have gone back, and I guess you're using some of the original
orchestrations.
Yeah.
That's thanks to the wonderful maestro, Stephen Mercurio, who did an incredible research in unearthing these orchestrations and duplicating them for a modern orchestra. And I must admit that they really sound great without being cheesy. And indeed, yes. And I think that, like the Avokel I just sang, or like Be My Love, I mean, even when these are heard by the young people of nowadays, they don't laugh. I never was in a situation where I sang for someone, for a group of young people who never been to the opera. They never laughed. It was always like, wow, I never imagined that I would feel this way when I hear this music. I had goosebumps, or I had shivers, you know, down my spine. It's always this reaction, infallibly, because if sung well with a beautiful voice, this is the reaction that opera should have on people.
Well, it's that quality also of, I mean, just sitting here, I'm, what, 15 feet away from you, just the sheer sound of and size of the voice. I think people aren't used to that. They're used to amplified sound, and it's an overwhelming experience to hear that kind of a voice coming from someone.
Yeah, I mean, it singing is a miracle of nature. There's no doubt. The vocal folds were not designed for singing. They were designed mostly to keep the air in the abdomen so that you have strength. Try lifting something without breathing before. You have half the strength of if you conversely breathe. But then, of course, we evolved, and probably, of course, the voice was a form of communication, like it is for many animal species in the animal kingdom. And in the case of humans, it evolved quite a lot, that we started from mumbling a few sounds, to a few war cries, to composing and to singing a whole opera by Verdi, Massenet, Puccini, etc. And I think that music is, in general, can you imagine life without music? Music is everywhere. You know, it's in the elevator, it's when you call for some pizza, it's when you call UPS after they have repeatedly lost your package and have all that wonderful, idiomatic couple of chords repeatedly endless. So music is really everywhere, and I think that it would be a pity that the highest form of performing arts, which is opera, will lose more in popularity. And I think that people, the different administrations around the world from the opera houses are doing a great job with these live from the Met HD, for example. I know that Mr. Gelb is a premier advocate to bring opera to the masses. But it all goes back to the singers. If we're not gonna be the ambassadors of this music, then the art form is gonna suffer. We cannot just sing for people who have all the recordings from 1890 till nowadays. I have the utmost respect and admiration for those people and for the love they have towards the art, but we cannot be elitist. We have to bring new audiences to the opera houses.
Let's conclude with one final selection from your new CD, the tribute to Mario Lanza, and this is Because?
Because. Okay. Also, it's a song which was written specifically for Caruso, and that Mario Lanza sings in his movie, The Great Caruso, in tribute, of course, of The Great Caruso.
Divine, because God made
Tenor Joseph Kalea and pianist Bill Billingham performing Because live here on WFMT. And you can hear Joseph Kalea in performance one more time this season, March 28th, in Puccini's La Boheme, along with Anna Netrebko. And then you'll be back next season for Verdi's La Traviata in a new production. But actually, that's the role in which you made your debut here at Lyric.
Indeed.
Is that correct?
I think it was 07. Yeah. Or 06, or I think it was 07. And I love Chicago. I love the Deep Pan Pizza. I love all the great restaurants. I love...
Cowboy boots?
The cowboy boots, of course, yes. But that's thanks to Houston Grand Opera, actually, in Texas. They were the ones who introduced me to cowboy boots. Indeed, Anthony Freud and Patrick Summers, who invited me there. But it's also noteworthy to point out that my six-year-old son managed to sleep through all my performance here in this studio.
So have your family with you here.
So, today, my family's here with my daughter Clara as well, and my girlfriend Sabine. And he's sleeping through all this. I don't know quite how he manages. Maybe my voice is not as big after all.
Well, thank you. It's been a delight to have you here this afternoon. And we hope to have you back in the studio when you're here in Chicago next time.
It'll be my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Our guests have been Joseph Kalea and Bill Billingham in this live impromptu. And our recording engineer today was Mary Mazurek and the series producer for Impromptu, Louise Frank. And I'm Lisa Flynn. Thanks for listening this afternoon. Let's go back now to Peter Van de Graaff in the studio.